are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, so real stories can inspire hope and motivate others to seek help, right? And so today we want to highlight a few powerful journeys of people who've faced OCD, who have sought treatment, and who have come out stronger on the other side. Each story is unique, but the common thread is courage, support, and persistence. And so we're looking forward to hearing some positive stories of overcoming OCD challenges. And Dr. Jerry Bezuidenhout from the Vista Clinic joins us once again. Good morning, Doc. Welcome back to the program.
Morning, Wongi. Morning, listeners.
Thank you for joining us once again. And this is a positive conversation we're going to be having today as you share with us some stories of overcoming OCD challenges. What does recovery look like for different people with OCD?
It varies from person to person. The same factors that influence the illness also influences us as a person. Mm-hmm. So you can roughly break recovery down into three parts. The one is the people who've got symptoms, okay. They get treatment and the symptoms go away. Other people that have sort of intermittent symptoms, when there's stressors, it comes back again. Mm-hmm. And then you get a group that are sort of severe and enduring. You know, they've got constant symptoms and it's a constant battle for them. And there are different factors that influence each one of those.
Right. And what
I don't know. I heard I have to be positive, so I'm not sure whether I have to tell you those factors.
Sure, let's get the full picture.
Okay. So the longer someone has been unwell, the more severely the illness impacted on a person's functioning, you know, the less social support they've got. Mm-hmm. And the more they struggle to work with the illness.
Yeah.
And all of that has got a negative impact, and the other way around.
Okay.
And I'll tell you some interesting stories how it plays out differently in different people.
Okay. All right. I want to hear those. Go ahead.
Okay. So one patient, he's got very severe OCD. He gets very disturbing thoughts about sexually harassing his children.
Yeah.
But what he's done exceptionally well, you know, he takes his treatment, he's done various therapies, mm-hmm. but his symptoms are very, very severe. But okay. Despite that, he's got a wife, he's got children, he's a very loving father. Mm-hmm. You know, he gives them hugs, you know, he lives out his affection towards them, mm-hmm. and he lives with the trauma in his head that he might have sort of done something inappropriate. Mm. So in his mind, he's always hyper-vigilant about not coming across as being sexually inappropriate or doing something inappropriate towards his children.
Yeah.
But he's made a decision what type of a father he wants to be.
Right.
And he lives that out despite the illness. He just carries that suffering with him all the time.
Sure.
So it's a beautiful story. He really struggles. And what's interesting, he can't see the beauty of what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's sometimes so caught up with the illness that he doesn't realize, you know, he's grown beyond the illness.
Yeah.
He's a very successful businessman. You know, his marriage is good. And he's, all accounts, he's a very good father.
Yeah.
So that was, for me, it's a beautiful story, despite severe suffering.
Yeah.
You know, he's made decisions in life, and it's taken him beyond, he's grown as a person beyond the illness.
My goodness, that it's taking me back to the lesson you gave us the other day about intrusive thoughts and the fact that the sickness doesn't bring you pleasure. So it's not even like the intrusive thoughts are thoughts of things that you want to do. It's actually stuff that it's completely not who you are at all. It's nothing you want to do. It would not bring you pleasure to do it. So these thoughts are just tormenting you. And yeah, so that's it's quite a lot to be able to overcome that.
Yes, and to live despite them.
Yes.
An interesting thing is he doesn't see, you know, we talk about acceptance. Mm-hmm. He really struggled with the concept of acceptance because he understands he's got an illness, but he struggles to accept that he's got this thought. But even though he's struggling, his decisions about who he is and the type of man and the type of father he wants to be has taken him beyond that kind of intrusive thoughts. Wow. And that for me is very beautiful.
Yeah, it's complicated. Now, what were some of the biggest obstacles that people faced in their recovery journeys?
I think the biggest one is to be optimistic, because optimism is wonderful when things are going well.
Okay.
But when you've got a chronic condition, optimism means you don't see the possible sort of risk factors or issue that might stop you from being successful. And then you're unrealistically hopeful.
Mm.
So by being realistically hopeful, you know it's going to be hard work, you know it's suffering, and you don't have these kind of airy-fairy kind of expectations of yourself.
Yeah.
socially, people not understanding the illness, telling you just, pull yourself together, or going the opposite way, you having those thoughts, let's say like molesting children or killing someone, then it means those thoughts are who you are. So therefore you are that person, that people being very blaming about that. They're not really understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in spiritual communities, especially in the Christian community, there's a lot of teaching about short-term illness.
Okay.
So, I've got a short-term illness, I pray about it, I get healed. There's very little teaching about chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I have a faithful life and develop a relationship with God despite having an illness? And how do I carry that illness with me in my relationship with God? And that is often a huge hurdle in Christian communities.
I can imagine.
Because it becomes very blaming. So if I've prayed and I haven't been healed, then it means my faith is not good enough.
Yeah.
God is either ignoring me or he's punishing me. And those are major obstacles. And then another interesting thing that's an obstacle is if people are lazy.
Mm-hmm.
In all my years' experience, I've always smiled at it doesn't matter what kind of education or background it is, but when people are able to work hard and they're used to working hard, then they get the best results.
Okay.
Because they're not scared of working.
Yeah.
And taking things on, which is it's always beautiful for me. And how it looks differs from person to person then, mm-hmm. but that is it's a huge sort of factor.
Yeah.
Just being able to work hard.
Sure. What you said about the Christian community and, especially if you have OCD and you are a Christian, and I can imagine some of these thoughts, like you're giving examples of wanting to molest people, thoughts of hurting people and things like that, and how opposed they are to our Christian values and to what God requires of us. And in fact, God, actually, the Bible tells us whatever is happening in your mind, you've already done it. According to the Bible, you've already done it. So I can imagine the guilt that you're feeling like you've already done it, even though it's not, again, it's not anything you want to do. You don't have that desire to do that for real. But that must be so complicated in the mind, and to try and explain it to the Christian community. I for one, would definitely, my first thought, if we had never had these conversations, I would also be thinking, just think about something else, like get it out of your mind, or maybe you're not
exactly
praying hard enough, right?
Yes, yeah. So that's, well, what we do is we evaluate from a wellness perspective.
Right.
And not from an illness perspective, so just understanding that, there's an illness. Okay. So I need to enrich my thinking and how I evaluate my thinking and that. So that's the beauty of us humans. Now, we're so beautifully complex.
Yeah. Now, how did the or support networks play a role in the progress of some of the cases that you've seen?
I think it plays a huge role. Medication often makes a huge difference in that it just reduces the severity of the illness to such a level that people can actually think beyond the illness and then start developing strategies about how do I live in a different way and how am I going to manage this illness or resist the illness. And then with therapy, it helps the person to see the wholeness. Mm. You know, and it helps to identify what's the function the illness has taken in my life. Because in the process of getting better, I have to let go of certain things.
Okay.
Whether it's I like it or not, it's still part of me. And when it's not there, I've lost something.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is a lot of people with OCD hoard.
Okay.
So one of my patients, you know, he's been hoarding things for the last 9-10 years. Everything in his house is in chaos.
Mm.
You know, you can't sit anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. His car stands outside, everything. But his family understands he's got an illness, so they excuse that.
Yeah.
Now that we're treating him, he's moving out of what we call the sick role into a normal role, and then people start having expectations of him again.
Sure.
And that can be quite daunting.
Yeah, yeah.
So therapy helps with that, and sort of keeping it back, bringing back to realism, breaking the whole illness down into pieces, and identifying, you know, what is more severe, what is less severe, and what's the kind of areas that we can attack. And then with that, you know, what is the emotional components that makes it worse? What are the physical components? And then you really break it down into nice pieces. And that's where, you know, if you look at therapy, it's actually a specialized teaching. That's all it is.
Right.
You're teaching someone about different areas of their lives and then how the illness has got a relationship with it. And then how to change that relationship. But in a thoughtful manner rather than just in a reactive, unconscious manner that occurs when the illness starts. So it can be very beneficial. You get some very exceptional people and exceptional families that they read up and they do a lot of things right. And then they don't need that. You know, they are the therapists themselves. And the beauty of today is with the internet, knowledge is widely available.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go to a therapist to help us gain knowledge. The therapists often help us to sift between all available knowledge to see what is applicable to me,
exactly,
and how do I apply that in my recovery process.
All right. And when we look at these people who have overcome OCD challenges, what advice would they have for others who are maybe just in the early stages or just starting their recovery journey?
I think most of the feedback I have from patients is they're having a goal as a person. Where do I want to grow to? You know, is it in a year's time? Is it in 5 years' time? You know, if I'm living in someone's house, do I want to go and live on my own? Do I want to have an overseas trip? Because by doing that, it gives you a focus beyond your illness.
Right.
And I'm growing towards something. I'm not just trying to get away from illness. I'm managing the illness in context of life goals.
I like that. Okay.
And it's that for me was the, if I look at patients, that's the biggest sort of driving factor that helps them manage the sort of difficulties around rehabilitation and managing the illness.
Yeah.
And it reduces the amount of hopelessness because I've got hope for the future and I've got a dream where I'm going. That for me was the biggest to be, like I explained to you, that patient with that kind of severe illness, he's got very good goals in terms of business, in terms of marriage, in terms of parenting, and that carries him beyond his illness.
Beautiful.
Even though he is suffering, but he's still growing, and in that process, his family grows with him.
So once you learn how to manage it, like this particular case you're talking about, and the fact that he's still suffering, even though he's managing it, is there hope for the suffering to end, or is this just going to be, for most cases at least, is it a lifelong struggle?
Well, the illness tend to be lifelong.
Wow.
You know, the severity tend to fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, once they've got the medication, it's under control, then they can function. But that kind of, when there's pressure in life and triggers that can make it worse, you know, it goes, it's like ebbing and flowing.
Right.
So it's very seldom that people are healed.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we don't have that yet. You know, the brain is so complex and we're struggling to understand it properly.
So, right. So even just learning to manage it is in itself a victory.
Yes, but and also people, if people can enrich their definition of success.
Yes, exactly.
It helps a lot. We tend to have a very monotonous financial success definition in life. We don't look at in terms of, you know, what does success mean in my marriage? Because in a marriage, there's no real outcomes.
Yeah.
It's about equality. It's about joy and about enjoying each other's company. In social, with friends and with family and, you know, parenting. So having, in those different areas, having a good definition, what is success? Mm-hmm. It brings realism back. So whenever the emotions want to run away and we think, oh, that guy is fantastic, you know, that person's got so much money. So, okay, wonderful. Right. You know, I appreciate that, but I, you know, these are my goals.
Yes, exactly.
And this is what I can do, this is what I can't do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Even the example that you gave of like a successful marriage, where some people would measure success in terms of the longevity of the marriage, whereas they're not thinking about other aspects of it.
Oh, very much so. I've seen lots of people that have been married for 40 years, and boy, oh boy, they sleep with one eye open because they, you know, there's no love in that marriage left, but they just, you know, they sleep here.
Yeah.
Which is fine. They've got their sort of reasons for it, but there's the love, the joy, the safety, the peace, and that in the marriage.
Yeah. So the
and again, that's part of goals.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Now, why is it important to celebrate every small step in recovery, do you think?
So once you're ill for a while, you know. Remember when we talk up in medicine, when we talk chronic, we talk more than 3 months. Mm-hmm. So when the illness has gone on for more than 3 months, you know, it starts eroding self-confidence. You know, it impacts your functioning. Mm-hmm. So you're not, for example, let's say an adult with no illness, you know, functioning well, they function, let's say, about 40%.
Okay.
So when you get an illness, it impairs your functioning. That person functions on maybe 10%. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, they go below 10% or they go below zero because they're not able to work and not able to maintain relationships. So they're on a minus 10. So working back from a minus 10 to a 40 is 50 points.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
So you have to allow yourself a process of recovery.
Yeah.
And then by breaking it down into smaller pieces, it's a very good change management strategy, is that it helps you maintain hope and motivation and endurance. Mm. So that you, and at the same time, remember, OCD makes you the intrusive thoughts gives you anxiety. It's not pleasurable. If I have a goal and I achieve it and I celebrate it, there is pleasure. Mm-hmm. I have build confidence. And that slow build adds to the recovery process.
Yeah.
That I can see, but I can make plans. I can achieve it despite having the illness. It's not just the illness being in control.
Right.
And as you grow along that path, those small celebrations helps you along and you grow in it. And when you're conscious about your celebration, you can repeat what you've done in different scenarios because you know what you've done and what you aim for, which makes you so much stronger. So anxiety management in OCD, if I know, you know, I use these different techniques, when I get to work and I become very anxious, I know the techniques that I can use.
Yeah.
It makes me stronger in my work. It's not just for the illness management. And celebrating those small things help us being aware and being conscious of the recovery process.
Sure.
Once you get to a point where it is sort of more routine, then it falls back into its old sort of unconscious.
Okay, I like that.
But then you've got the knowledge.
Yeah.
And if needed, you can apply it consciously then.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually going to ask you, is there not a risk of being so hyper-focused on the illness itself when we measure every little success? But I think you answered that right now when you said at some point it just falls back into just being a normal part of the routine. It's no longer something that needs to be, you know, marked and celebrated.
Yes. But remember, when you look at the recovery, it's not just about the illness management. Mm-hmm. We work on a physical, emotional, social, spiritual component.
Okay.
So if I work in terms of, okay, you know, the illness has really stopped me from socializing with friends.
Yeah.
And then I plan and I engage with friends and then I celebrate, you know, having socialized with a friend.
Yeah.
It's building life again. It's not just avoiding illness.
Yeah.
So it's, and that's where the richness comes in, you know, the physicality. Let's say I'm cleaning until 12 o'clock. Now I've decided I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock and put the light off. Mm. I'm restricting the illness, but I'm also learning healthy sleep routines.
Exactly. I like that.
And
the focus.
Yeah, so it's much richer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's about me as a person, not just avoiding the illness. We're managing it.
Beautiful, beautiful. I like that. Now, a question coming through, I think it probably applies to what you had said earlier. The question is, how do we set success goals and manage expectations at the same time? Is there a risk of being too ambitious or optimistic?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. That's one of the biggest risks that I find, especially if someone's been unwell for a long time, both they and the family, for recovery and getting better.
Yeah.
And often when once there is a small movement, people get so excited. They, you know, they pile the sort of next goals on top of, you know, of each other.
Mm.
And then people tend to become disheartened.
Right.
So it's very important to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I mentioned that, you know, it doesn't matter how you phrase it where you are at. You know, I use in terms of 50% to minus 10%. It doesn't really matter. You just need some sort of subjective measurement to tell you where you are at.
Yeah.
So I haven't been to church for 2 years now. Okay, so I don't know people there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I know them, but I don't know them the same way.
Right.
So going back to church, you know, do I still have church clothes? Do I, you know, will I be able to go on my own?
Mm-hmm.
So that whole process is going to be quite anxiety provoking. And the first day when I'm there and everybody's very happy that I'm back,
yeah,
you know, they want to pull me into a Bible study group and to the choir and to this. And then it gets overwhelming and people run away.
Yeah.
And that's where the optimism comes in, which is dangerous.
Okay.
And that's why you want the hopeful realism. I hope I'm recovering in the future, but I have to manage today so that I can be okay tomorrow, because today's burden has an influence on my ability to manage tomorrow, because the limitations here are emotional. And if I make today's little hurdle too high, tomorrow that emotional burden adds to today's burden, adds to tomorrow's burden.
Yeah.
And then it becomes more and more difficult to sustain it. So that's why it's so important to have very clear goals. And it's not these abstract goals. It can be, I want to go to church once a month for the next 6 months.
Okay.
I just want to go and be and sit there. I don't have to greet anybody. I'm going to sit there back and I'm going to leave. And if I do that, then I've been successful. Yeah. And then I build on it further and further. And some people get to a point where I can go to church, I sit to the back, and I can greet three people.
Okay.
And that's the best I'll ever be. But that's okay.
That's okay. It's manageable.
Yeah, because it's better quality than what I had.
Mm.
I often say to people that if you're severely affected by a psychiatric illness,
mm-hmm.
if we improve their lives with 1%, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
We're not looking for 50, just 1%. because sometimes they're so affected by the illness. You know, the quality of life is so poor that 1% really makes a huge difference. And that takes the burden off the person to, I have to achieve all of this.
Yeah.
You know, I can achieve 1%. And then once we get there and it's the patient is okay, then what else do you do want to do or can you do? And then working with that. And that process sometimes takes 2 years, sometimes takes 10 years as the person sort of grows as a person.
Yeah.
But the illness can sometimes be just so disabling that, you know, that growth is limited. They can only do so much. They can never grow beyond that. And that should be okay.
Okay. Okay. And when you say like it can take 6 months, it can take a year or 10 years, does it ever get to a point where for the patient, they get to a point where they just give up because it's been 6 months, there's been no change. I still feel anxious every time I go to church. I'm still not feeling, it's not getting easier. It's still as hard as it was the first time around. Does it ever get to a point where someone just gives up and says, this is not working?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's hard work. Yeah. It's really hard work. And it's hard work with suffering. So, yeah, I know some people just give up and say, no, sorry, I can't do it anymore.
Mm.
And again, then it's about how do you relax? How do you allow someone to be tired?
Yeah.
And then, okay, you know, just be with the person, walk a path with the person.
Yeah.
And then get to the point, okay, are you, you know, maybe sometimes a year, sometimes 2 years later. And what I often find when you know if you've reduced that, the pressure, people get energy again and they start doing small things.
Okay.
Because the ones they see that they as a person can grow despite the illness, that part grows. And the other thing I was just reminded about the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one person looking at the patient that's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We always say that, you know, they've got their, you know, let's say someone in church and they've got a member, a family member that's suffering from OCD. The other person has got everything right and together. And it's not true.
Mm.
God has got a relationship with both of those.
Yes.
We don't have to do God's work. We can often pray for someone and sort of be there for them on a spiritual level like that, but also trust God that God loves that person as well.
Mm.
And God walks a path with that person as well. So we don't have to do God's work. We can just be with the person. And that's sometimes very freeing for the people around the patient that suffers.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. Sure. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jerry, for coming through for yet another very informative conversation that we've been having. And I trust that our listeners have been blessed by that one. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Have a lovely weekend, boy.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.